First off, thank you so much for joining us today, and I'm sorry that we had some initial technical difficulties, but the webinar slides should be emailed to you either now or shortly, and we have as many people and capacity on the phone as possible. We will go through and change the slides. We'll tell people when we're changing the slides here today. So I wanted to just say that we are hopeful to discuss all the executive orders that have come out so far and also a future one, and then kind of look at where things are in the future. I'm going to turn it over to Tony. He's going to introduce everybody, and then we'll get started.
Great. Thanks, Ashley. So, everyone, thank you for hopping on to this webinar today. We're going to be covering, as Ashley mentioned, the most recent executive actions that affect immigrants and refugees. Again, here's the webinar login information. You should see it on your screen. If you have happened to log in twice to the webinar, or more than once, please log out so that other folks can log in and see the visual portion. For other folks who are unable to get the visual part of the webinar, please do call in, and we're going to send you the slides, or you should have the slides, and then you can follow along that way. Okay. The folks who are going to be on the webinar today are Melissa Hastings, our immigration policy advisor here at Migration and Refugee Services; Matthew Wilch, our refugee policy advisor at MRS; Michael Hill, who is our outstanding government relations manager, associate director here at USCCB, and of course Ashley Feasley, who you just heard, our director of policy at Migration and Refugee Office. This is the agenda that we're going to be going over, okay? And I'm going to go ahead and move us along here. Ashley, do you want to go first?
Sure. So thank you again for joining us. We're going to start with slide that says where things stand. So as I mentioned, we have had three executive orders in 3 days of last week. On Wednesday, we saw an executive order on border security and on interior enforcement. And last Friday, we saw an executive order on refugee resettlement and also immigrants from certain identified countries. We're going to do an analysis of the executive orders, hitting on some of the key points, talking about the likelihood of implementation, what that will look like, what possible obstacles could occur. And we're also going to pivot and talk about kind of we're also going to talk about one prospective executive order on immigrant benefits that we think we could be seeing, that some of you may have heard about the news. From there, we're going to pivot to talk a little bit about what we're seeing in communities and also just look at some of what are the next steps on advocacy and what's going on with Congress and what we can do next. So from there, I'd like to turn to slide 4, which is the background on executive orders. I think it's very important for us to have an initial discussion about what exactly an executive order is. Particularly in the immigration field, there's been a lot of orders or actions related to executive power in the past couple years, since 2012. It's important that we have a clear understanding as to what the difference is between an executive order and an executive action was. So, an executive order are directives from the president to federal agencies to exercise executive power in a particular way. These executive orders, they carry the force and effect of law, and federal agencies are required to follow these orders, okay? Often, executive orders require agencies to regulations to implement the policy specified in the order. And you'll notice the executive orders that we've seen so far, that's exactly what's been happened. It's President Trump directing certain branches of his government to move forward, investigate, implement, and proceed. So how is that different than different from an executive action? Many of us here are familiar with executive actions as we work on immigration reform, and we saw the last president President Obama used executive action, most notably in 2012 with the Deferred Action Childhood Arrival, or DAC. And then he also issued a series of executive actions on immigration in November of 2014. So executive orders differ from executive actions in the sense that an executive action is a formal statement of intent. Executive actions are binding as federal law. Through executive actions, the president uses ideas to pursue particular objectives and instructs federal agencies to carry them out. Congress can make executive actions law, but doesn't have to. So, as we can see, the executive order is a stronger proclamation than the executive action. But both are deriving from the executive branch, from the president, and both do interact with other particular mechanics of the government. In the executive order context, you see engagement with the departments, the cabinet-level offices, and then also there's further engagement with Congress, and there's possibly also engagement with the courts. So many of us here are unhappy with the executive orders and what's written to immigrants and refugees. So we have a number of questions about whether executive orders are challenged or changed. And in order to be valid, an executive order must operate within the bounds of executive power, meaning they can only exercise powers that are authorized by an act of Congress or the U.S. Constitution. This, it becomes an issue of whether this was implicitly or inherently stated. But the legislative and judicial branches can operate as checks on executive orders that exceed the executive's power. So, for example, when a lawsuit is filed to challenge an executive order, a federal court may declare the order invalid and or block enforcement. So that could be through the judicial branch. Similarly, Congress may pass a statute contradicting the executive order or cutting appropriations for implementation, which would be a legislative way. We're going to hear later on from government relations about some of these ongoing efforts. With that, and if there are not any questions about the difference between executive orders and executive action, we're going to move on to hearing from Melissa Hastings about the Border Enforcement Executive Order. Are there any, I guess we can wait and have questions until the end, and I'll turn it over to Melissa.
Thank you so much, Ashley. Why don't we go ahead and move over to the next slide? So the executive order on border security and immigration enforcement was one of the two immigration-related orders that was signed on January 25th by the president. And I'll be going over some of the order's key provisions and their impacts. First, the order greenlights the construction of a physical wall at the U.S.-Mexico border. And what are the implications of this? Well, the wall will likely not be fleeing for their lives. Instead, we're very concerned that it will serve to push vulnerable migrants fleeing persecution, including women and children, onto more dangerous routes and, unfortunately, likely into the hands of traffickers and smugglers who are waiting to friend vulnerable individuals. Furthermore, it's worth noting that the effort will be quite costly. The wall is estimated to cost between $10 to $25 billion, with some estimates as high as $40 billion. And this is an expense that may fall on U.S. taxpayers to cover, as Mexico's president has repeatedly stated that the country will not be covering the cost. Second, the order calls for the Department of Homeland Security to hire an additional 5,000 Border Patrol agents. And this is on top of 17,000 agents who are already assigned to patrol the southern border. Implications of this. Well, in addition to contributing to militarization of the border, there's also evidence suggesting that this may not actually have the intended effects that the administration is hoping it will have. Studies show that increased border security does not necessarily affect the number of unlawful entries, and that it can actually dissuade migrants from leaving the United States if they can make it here without apprehension. And this is because they may fear that when they not be able to return due to the additional border security. So that may be one unintended consequence. Third, the order also calls for establishment of additional immigration detention facilities near the U.S.-Mexico border. It calls for increased detention of individuals who are apprehended for violating immigration law. And it also calls for DHS to stop releasing migrants from detention pending their removal proceedings. And so here, essentially the order, and I apologize, I think we actually need to move on to the next slide. So as I was saying, essentially the order is taking here as its premise the idea that all migrants are criminals. And these provisions are going to result in detention of individuals such as asylum seekers who really pose no threat to our communities and no risk of flight pending their removal proceedings. This will mean that families, including those with U.S. citizen members, are going to be needlessly separated pending their loved ones' removal proceedings. And it will also, unfortunately, mean that detained individuals will have less access to counsel, which, of course, will impact their ability to obtain relief. Further, the order also negatively impacts asylum seekers, and it does this in a number of ways. So as we just discussed, asylum seekers will be among those impacted by the expansion of detention. In addition, asylum seekers will be at risk for criminal prosecution for unlawfully entering the United States. And so they could face criminal prosecution before they ever have a chance to present their asylum claim to an immigration judge. In addition, those arriving at the southern border by land may also be forced to wait for their removal proceedings in Mexico. And, of course, this would put them at an increased danger for persecution and trafficking. Additionally, the order requires DHS to assign asylum officers and immigration judges to the detention facilities at the border. And essentially what this is trying to do is it's trying to fast-track processing for cases of detained individuals. Unfortunately, this fast-tracking, it will decrease the ability of migrants to obtain legal assistance and gather evidence for their immigration proceedings. And, of course, as you might expect, this will likely greatly impact their ability to obtain relief for which they might otherwise qualify. And finally, I just want to quickly touch on the issue of unaccompanied children. So the order also calls on DHS to ensure training of its officers on U.S. law relating to screening and treatment of unaccompanied children. And while this provision is rather benign on its face, advocates are concerned that the administration will be using this provision and this training as an opportunity to possibly narrow the definition of unaccompanied children so that less children can qualify for those protections, or otherwise rolling back protections for these unaccompanied children. So as you can see, the order has a number of concerning and really deeply troubling provisions in it. You may have read our statement that we've released that highlights our concerns with the order. If not, I'm sure we can circulate that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ashley for a summary of the interior enforcement order.
Hey, Ashley, before you begin, let me try something here to get rid of the beeping. So let me just give me a second here.